This recording is a production of Faith Builders. This presentation was recorded at Reach 2013, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 14 and 15, 2013.
Well, welcome to the class of Homemaking as a Ministry. Last Saturday, a week ago, I attended a women's seminar held in our area. And the lady talked about how God orchestrated the events of her life that gave a platform from which she could speak and proclaim Jesus. And it really was a time of exalting Jesus. It was just amazing the way she was able to take some of the hard things in her life and see God, and even get to the point where she could trust God. The next day in Sunday school, one of the ladies in the Sunday school class said, "You know, it was fun to be there yesterday, but I just wonder what platform God's making for me. I wonder if I know how the events that have happened in my life are forming a platform for which I can speak and proclaim Jesus." I mean, that lady had opportunity upon opportunity upon opportunity. She was invited to churches. She was invited to schools. She was invited to women's seminars. She was going all over the place talking to thousands of people about Jesus. And so the lady was wondering, what is her platform from which to talk about Jesus, to tell Jesus, to proclaim Jesus? And somehow I got the feeling that I knew what she was talking about, because she is a full-time homemaker as I am. And we just wonder, what is our platform? Our world can be so narrow and so focused and so small that we're like, does it even matter what we're doing? If I would have been given a chance in Sunday school, I would have said, yes, we have a platform, a huge platform to proclaim Jesus. We have every day, every minute to proclaim Jesus. Any homemaker has been given a platform to proclaim Jesus. It is so easy to lose sight of the vision of homemaking through the everyday mundane tasks. It is easy to lose sight when the world announces success through dollar signs. It's easy to lose sight when the homemaker is devalued. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And many times throughout Scripture, in the Old Testament especially, it says, and the earth will be filled with the glory of God. God's intent is to have the earth be full of people, but his intent is much bigger than that, is to be full of the glory of him, be full of his glory, be full of people that give back praise to God, to worship God. That is God's intent for the earth. He said multiply, but he wanted it to be multiplied so that it would be full of people who enjoyed what he made, enjoyed what he created for you and I, for all mankind. And when we enjoy it, we give praise, we worship God. I believe that the home is the primary place where nurturing lovers of God can happen, both in ourselves, but also in families and friends that walk through our door. Jesus grew up in a home. God, it seemed like God thought the best place to nurture and grow his son was in a home, so he gave him a home. And at the end of Luke 2, it says, and Jesus grew in stature and wisdom. God provided a home for his son to grow. The goal then of home is to nurture lovers of God. Susan McKayley said in her book, and I had this on the first screen, if the home place not adequate, they, the children, are deprived of the opportunity to develop as God intended. And I want to add to that, not just our children, not just the guests that walk through the door, but me, myself. If the home is not adequate, even for me, I am deprived of the opportunity to know God. We cannot nurture lovers of God if we aren't lovers of God ourselves. Homemaking is for all women. And I don't know if you're a married homemaker or a single homemaker here in the class today, but I'm glad you're here. Single homemakers need to make a home too, and they make it for themselves. But they also have to balance homemaking with making a living for themselves. So all women are homemakers. What are the functions of the home that work at nurturing our love for God? We do not really find a passage in Scripture, at least I haven't found it, in Scripture that says this and this and this and this is what the home should be and do. But it's implied throughout Scripture at different places. And I want to look at four different functions. Melvin laid a wonderful foundation for this class this morning. I just thought it was so good for a start, for a bounce off, a springboard for this class. We're going to take a little closer look in. He made a broad scope. We're going to take a little closer in look. And then if you want a little bit more, a closer look yet of each of these four functions, we do that in the homemaking class at FB. So we're just going to basically touch these four functions today, look a little bit at them, and then let you do the rest. So the four functions we want to look at is a place to belong, a place to grow, a place to learn, and a place to share. And we do all of those four functions with the ultimate vision in mind to nurture lovers of God. A place to belong, a place to grow, a place to learn, a place to share. Our goal, the vision, is to grow, nurture lovers of God. So let's look at the first of the functions that I want to talk about. And these are not in order of importance, but we're just going to look at the first one now that I found in Scripture. And it's talked about the word household comes through a number of times. We have Achan and his house were destroyed. We have the Philippian jailer and his house were delivered or believed. We have the story of Rahab. If you went into the house, you were saved. And then throughout Scripture, we hear Christians, especially in the New Testament, talking about the household of believers. When I hear that word household, I think it gives title to belonging to something or someone. And so the first function of the home that I want to look at is a place to belong. Belong. We all have that need to belong. Belonging gives identity. You observe or relate to any child who's been rejected from their home, and they really struggle with where do they fit in? Who are they? I've watched my sister, who has adopted three children, and in their early stages, and even to this day, and the children are 10, I think the oldest one is 10 and down, and in their early stages, even though she had them as an infant, they still had some very deep emotional needs that her own flesh and blood children did not have or do not have. There's something that is very to the core of us, this great need of belonging, and when that is rejected, when we're rejected from where we were born into or brought into the world, there's something that really we have to deal with, we have to struggle with. And so belonging gives identity. Belonging speaks who we are. When we go away on a vacation and come home, did you ever notice how your children just go to the toy closet and get out all the toys and become reacquainted? It's home. It's familiar. It's who they are. And when after you're done here, you'll probably go home and say, oh, there's no place like home. You know, Manor Church has done tremendous in providing for us here and making sure that the place is clean and keeping up with things. But there's no place like home because home speaks who we are. We decorate our homes. Caroline Wilder, in the book, and I forget which one of the series it is, but when they move out into the prairie, they build this house, and the first thing that she does is takes a little figurine and puts it on the mantle of the fireplace, and she goes, now it's home. Now it feels like home. There's something familiar there. But even if a home is not really fun to belong to, just like those three children of my sister's, their home was pretty abusive. But yet it still gave them a sense of belonging. But I think that we have to go further. Our home is not just a place to belong, but we need to make it a safe place to belong. A fortress, a refuge, a place of order, not chaos. A place where there's routine, an atmosphere of rhythm, obedience, discipline, respect. So a safe place to belong, a place of order, not chaos. A place of light, not darkness. And I think of the story of Jacob and Esau and the story of Joseph and how the parents favored one child above another. And that created tension in the home. Our places need to be places where we weed out evil. 2 John 1:10 says, if there come anyone to you and bring not this doctrine, receive him not into your house, neither bid him Godspeed. And so it's a place of light, not darkness, and a place of cleanness, not dirt. Verna talked yesterday about our houses being a place to share, and she said we don't have to worry about all the dust, and we don't. But I've been in places where you weren't even sure if you should use the restroom because it was so filthy. And our homes should be places where we clean to keep disease at bay as much as we can. We can't control it all, but our places should be places of cleanness, not dirt. A safe place to belong. When I was a child in my first through eighth grades of schooling, I knew home to be safe. At school, I was ridiculed. At school, I didn't belong. My group of friends, if you call them friends, I really struggled to fit in. I struggled to be a part of it. In fact, just recently, one of those friends wrote a letter and apologized for the way that she had treated me during those first 8 years of my schooling. But this had a big impact on me. But I remember time after time, I did not want to go to school in the morning. I just wanted to stay home. And it was always fun for me to get off the bus in the evening, and now I'm home, where it's safe, where I belong, where I'm not ridiculed for who I am. One of our children has struggled with bedwetting. And they've struggled with it through many of their growing years. And we've tried a variety of things. We tried chiropractic treatment. We went to the medical doctor. We have tried watching what they did after supper. We have tried watching the kind of drinks that they drank, whether they drank milk products or whether they drank whatever, just limited some of that stuff, and it just didn't seem to make any difference. And this mother didn't always do very well. She would get very, very frustrated. And to the point of being feeling really angry at, why can't you learn not to do this? And I'd have to go back and apologize. And as this child got older, the struggle still was. And they shared a room with one of their other siblings. And I never heard that sibling make any kind of comment or even make any kind of bad comment about the issue. And I always wonder, wow, how can they do that? I was impressed with how they were able to just be okay with it. A year or two ago, the child, as we were sitting around the table, Steve had said, asked them to make resolutions for the year, and we don't do this very often, but he decided to make goals for this year. And the child said to the family, my goal is not to wet my bed. And my heart was touched because it felt like this child was safe to say that here. This is a big thing for a 14-year-old, for a 15-year-old. And yet they felt safe enough to bring it to the family and said, that's my goal for this year. Our homes will not be rid of all issues, but they should be a safe place to deal with them. Knowing that home is a safe place to belong as a person helps me to understand what it means to belong to Christ, and it's safe, and he is safe. A child that struggles with not feeling safe at home, where he should feel safe, has a harder time knowing that God is safe. A safe place to belong gives settledness. So one function of the home is making it not just a place to belong, but a safe place to belong. And it's not just for those that are in my house, but it should be a safe place for me to belong as well. And this takes work. For the second function of the home we want to look at, we look to 1 Timothy 5:8. But if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, he hath denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. From this reference, we see that the home is a place to grow. A place to grow that provides for our needs. We all have needs. We need to eat. We need to rest. We need to work. We need to be clothed. And so our homes are places where a place to grow. But again, may I add an adjective before place? It should be a rich place to grow. Not just, well, here's the cereal, here's the milk, here's the beef, here's the whatever, but a rich place to grow where I take joy in providing for the family. Rich gives with the idea that it gives beyond duty. And I'm not talking about money value when I use the word rich. I'm just talking about going beyond the norm or going beyond the bare essentials. Think of, Beatrice said yesterday, thinking about color, thinking about texture of food. Just taking a little more care and consideration. Just not saying, well, here's the dress and here's the socks and here's the, but thinking, you know, what goes together good for this child? What is it that would really, that fits them well? Going beyond that. So it gives beyond duty, but it also adds joy, celebration, special touches to meals, and I just stop there. I just put dots there. We could go on. We could say, makes bedtime a look forward to experience. Maybe there's a ritual that you do before bed that just makes it bedtime look inviting. And so a rich place to grow adds joy, celebration. At our house, Saturday night, it's pizza night. Every Saturday night, that's what we decide to do. And some of my children have even hated to be going on a Saturday night because, oh, we'll miss out on pizza night. You know, it's something that they really look forward to. For Sunday dinners, we often do, I have two menus for this time in our life where we have turkey croquettes one Sunday and saucy chicken over rice the next Sunday. And I get tired of it faster than my family gets tired of it. You know, if I say something else, oh, you mean we're not having turkey croquettes or saucy chicken and rice? But it's something that they have looked forward to. They enjoy it. But a time of celebration. When I turned 16, I remember 2 days. I was 16 on the 15th, and on the 17th, I was in the barn milking cows. And I came in, and my mom had made me a beautiful jumper and a nice turtleneck to go to wear. And so I decided I was going to dress in that. And she didn't tell me that I should dress in that, but I decided to dress back into that. And I didn't realize at the time that I was playing right into their plan. But my brother and my first cousin were at the farm, and they had left to go to men's choir practice, supposedly. That's what I thought they did. And they went out to the church, was only about a mile away, and they had a tractor and a wagon out there, and they brought that to our home, and it was full of young people to celebrate my 16th birthday. I'll never forget that. You know, Mom could have just said, well, we're just having a cake and candles, and that's it. But she went to the extent of having and inviting and planning for a hayride and for a party, and it's got someone to do a nice cake, and you know, it was something I'll never remember and I'll never forget. And I was telling my mom that the other day, and she goes, I don't remember that. I said, well, I do. I will never forget that. The specialness that that said to me. Experiencing this as a person helps me to understand God's abundant provision for me. When I go beyond duty in giving to my children and giving to myself, I understand that God takes care of our physical needs, takes care of our basic needs, but he does so much more than that. He does so much more than that. His steadfast love, his presence, the knowledge and the skill that we have to make black bean soup rather than just open the can and put the black beans on the table. That is God's abundant provision for you and me. And I get to share that with my family. I get to share that even for myself, take the time to do that for myself. So the home, a safe place to belong, a rich place to grow. And now for our third function, let's go to Deuteronomy 6:9. And thou shalt write them, and them here is referring to the commands of God, upon the posts of thy house and on thy gates. And thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thy house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. Another function of our home is a place to learn. It's where we learn the commands of God and the skills needed to survive. The skills that are needed to do well in relationships. The skills that are needed to know and to hear God, to develop the disciplines, to learn the good character traits. But again, let's add a preposition to place and make it a fascinating place to learn. It's just not a place to learn, but it's a fascinating place. And what I mean by this, it is where I, as the homemaker, invite learning. A learning, ask questions that sparks curiosity, enjoys the question. And at age 2 years old, that's kind of hard to do sometimes, to enjoy them. But don't squelch them. Where questions are appreciated and asked, and sometimes I even ask so that I engage them, say, what do you think? What would you do if? When Kyle was young, our oldest, and he was a lone child at the time because he's the oldest, I spent many an hour on the floor playing with Duplo with him. And we'd go over to the farm where his uncles and his grandfather lived and worked. And then we'd come home and he would say, Mom, I want a high boy. And first of all, I had to be educated, what is a high boy? And then I would say, okay, let's work at it. So we'd get out the Duplo blocks, and we would work at making a high boy. And a high boy is a sprayer, you know, it's this tractor way up on four big wheels and goes down through the cornfield. And so we would work at making a high boy. And then we'd go back over, and they were combining. And so he'd come home, and he said, Mom, let's make a combine. So we'd sit down on the floor and try to work up a combine. Well, my son now is going to college for engineering. You know, spending time, just taking time to develop and work at that creativity part in him. He spent hours and hours with Lego. I had a little niece spend time with me one winter, and she was at my house, and I'm not sure what we were learning or what we were reading, but she got into this thing, what does dissolve mean? Aunt Cindy, what does dissolve mean? And so I said, well, let's try it. Let's see what we can dissolve. So we got some water, and I got out salt. And after a while, you couldn't see the salt. And I said, so now we can't see the water and the salt. It dissolved. That's what it means. So then we did sugar, and then we did Jell-O, and then we did beans or something like that that wouldn't dissolve. And she could see the difference. Another time, Stephen heard about this magnificent meteor shower that was going to happen. And usually they happen in the middle of winter in Pennsylvania. Well, around the world, but we happened to be in Pennsylvania at the time. And our children were young. We had preschoolers. And when the meteor showers usually happen, they happen at 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And so we decided that we were just all going to get up and go out and lay on the trampoline at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so we got the children all bundled up because it was in the middle of winter. I think it was in January or maybe even, well, anyway, it was very cold and there was snow on the ground. And so we took blankets and sleeping bags and we all laid down, looked up at the stars of the heavens. And it was such a wonderful time just to be able to talk to the children about the heavens and the expanse. We had a wonderful show. It was beautiful meteor shower that night. But it was something that they will remember and was a call to say, look at God. Look what he has done. Even though the twins were 4 years old at that point of time. I love birds, and sometimes I wonder if I should be spending the money on feeding the birds. And they make such a mess on my deck. But I just have a hard time giving that up, and I think our children, well, I know our children would too, because we love when in the spring the orioles come, or when the red-breasted grosbeaks come. And we have so many different varieties of birds, and it's fun just to watch their different habits. You know, they go up and down the tree, or go down the tree, upside down, or they sit snuggled on the branch like a woodpecker does. They all have different habits. And it's fun, and I just have a hard time thinking that I'll ever forget or ever not buy food for them. But learning grows our mind. The purpose of learning is to better know God. And this learning allows us to come alive to the incredible mystery, complexities of life, and wonder of what God has made, what God has created, and this increases our ability to serve. Increases our capacity to love God and others. So safe place to belong, rich place to grow, fascinating place to learn. And now for our final function of the home we'll look at, we'll go to Isaiah, first of all. Isaiah 54, 2 and 3. Enlarge the place of your tent, and let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out. For you will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your descendants will possess the nations and will people the desolate cities. And in Romans 12, verse 13, contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. The fourth function that I want to look at today is our home should be a place to share. Share invites others to participate. You know, we at home sit in the evening studying. Children or our school students sit at the table and study their lessons for tomorrow. Steve sits on the couch with his laptop preparing things for his day tomorrow. I am doing a variety of things. Either I'm working in the kitchen or else I'm sitting reading or else I'm, you know, doing here and there. And we decided that maybe one way to share this is to invite the students to come up and just be there to study. You know, we don't have to entertain them. All they can do, the only thing we do is pull out the table so there's more room for them around. And they just seem to love getting into a home. And so one way we can do for our one function of our home is make it a place that we share and invites others to participate in it. A Polish proverb, a guest in the home is God in the home. Peterson says, a home is to be a place where those who are members of other households or of none are regularly welcomed, where the fellowship of the household is enriched and enlarged by the presence of guests. So we can have other people come into our home for a meal, for overnight, for just study, for tea, for conversation, but we can also use our home as our home resources to bless other people. You all know what it means to take a meal into the new mother, to take a meal into the grieving family, to take a meal into someone who is sick. And we do that out of our home. And so we don't always just invite people in our home, but we use our home from which to bless other people. But again, let's add a word to place, an adjective. Our homes are not just a place to share, but they should be a warm place to share. And I could just stop here and say, y'all heard Verna yesterday. Verna did extremely well in talking about being gracious, sharing hospitality. Well, let's talk about it. A warm place to share for those of you that weren't here. Warm gives coloring to sharing. Guests are valued, loved, enjoyed, friendly, welcoming. Those are warm words. Words when you come in, you feel like you're wanted. You feel like they were looking forward to you coming. Our guests should be our focus. And I think one of the time, the story of Mary and Martha, and Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to him. And I think, you know, Mary took time to know her guests. And Verna said that very well yesterday. And I think that's the one thing that we do, need to do when we share our homes. It's not about us. It's about them. And we need to take time to get to know them. What are their needs? Watch them. Observe them. Maybe it's a mother with small children, and you could just tell she's exasperated. And so maybe the thing that you will get to do is to just take care of her children for a while. I remember one time when Starla and her family came up to my house, and the men were there, and they decided, you know what, let's just go take a walk and talk. And I thought, oh, fine. They can just walk off and go talk. And guess what Starla and I are left to do? To take care of the children, entertain the children. And at first I was really frustrated with that. I was like, oh, that's just not fair. What if Starla and I would have said, you know what, let's just go take a walk. And left the children. Maybe we should have. But then I thought, you know, here's an opportunity for me to give Starla a break, to give Starla a rest. Even though I just would have really enjoyed talking with Starla. And I could have felt pretty selfish about that. But here's an opportunity to give a mother of young children a rest. So guests are valued. What are their needs? Look, listen, pay attention to them. And then a warm place to share, they feel that if you're willing and feeling expectant of them. You're looking forward to having them come. When they come through the door, there's a radiance on your face. Your heart is saying, I was looking forward to you. I'm expecting you. I'm excited about sharing my home with you. There's a willing, expectant heart beyond the giver. Oftentimes, numerous times, we had to go to Virginia, Harrisonburg, Virginia, for a variety of things. And Steve has family in Harrisonburg, Virginia. And there's one place, well, there's a number of places we really like to stay at, but there's one in particular that really catches us every time we think about going there. We think, well, this is where we want to go. And it's Uncle Charles and Aunt Doris Heatwell. Every time we walk into the door, They're just beaming, like we just did them the world's best favor by showing up. And I remember learning from her, like we go to our bedrooms and there was candies, chocolates, in everybody's pillow, in everybody's space. And one time when we went down there, Desiree's best friend had just moved to Virginia, Harrisonburg, Virginia. And Aunt Doris knew that. And guess what? Aunt Doris invited her best friend to spend the night with Desiree. And she did that ahead of time, not even us knowing it. And I was just so blessed by her thinking about what is it that these people would really like? What is it that would make them happy? And she thought of Desiree and how Desiree was struggling to let go of her best friend. But she knew that and invited her to be there. At our home, and because of students and the school there at FB, we also get times when we invite students and volunteers into our home. And there are times when it's just the volunteers down to school for a meal, and so we get these little emails that say, here's your opportunity to invite volunteers for supper. And so one time, a number of years ago, I invited the volunteers and some of the single men staff and the single staff that usually eat their meals at the school to come up for supper, because I forget what students were doing. And they gave me a count. The kitchen gives me a count of how many will be involved or how many will be coming. And When they started arriving, I noticed a mother and three young children. And I thought, oh, I didn't prepare for them. And I didn't say it like that. I said, oh, what are they doing here? I didn't prepare for that. I don't know if I have enough food. My table's stretched out. I don't even know. That's what my children heard behind the door before anybody showed up. And so she came to the door, and she said, oh, were you expecting us? And I said, no, I wasn't. They didn't have you in the count. But I said, oh, come on in. Come on in. It's okay. And later, I found her in the office of our house crying. And I thought, why, of course. So I went to her and I put my arm around and said, oh, please forgive me. I am so sorry. It's okay you're here. It's just okay. And then she kind of, you know, she rallied and she was at our table. But I thought, oh, how could I? A mother that was already feeling the loneliness of her husband missing for the day. And then she goes to this person's house, one of the administrator's wives of all things, and she's not even sure that she's even welcome there. In fact, she knows she's not welcome there because of her attitude. And I missed a wonderful opportunity to say, sure, come on in. It's yours. It doesn't matter. Just come right on in. I had to go to her several times after that, again and again, just apologize. I am so sorry that I didn't make you feel more welcome. Engaging in this way with our guests gives an opportunity to be Jesus to people. As others, gives us opportunity to be Jesus in person to others. Let me put it that way. In Hebrews 13:2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unaware. And sometimes we're entertaining Jesus. And so it's not always just an opportunity for us to be Jesus to other people in person, but it's also a time when we get to minister to Jesus. Another little story that I will give in sharing our homes. And this also comes out of from a relation of ours. I'm trying to think how I can say this here. Steve's side of the family, they have, his mother's siblings have been very, very well trained in doing a very fabulous job of keeping home, keeping house, and everything is just so perfect. So the bed corners are just so neatly done. But they're so gracious. Oh, you just enjoy having them. In fact, one time we were able as a family to have all the siblings and their spouses around our dining room table in our house. And that was such a privilege. And to have his 100-year-old grandmother there too. There was one brother and his wife missing. But they were there around the house, around the table, and it was just such a delightful evening for us. But one of the things that we thought about before they came was this, that to really honor these people, we need to dress in our Sunday best. And so the guys wore white shirts and black pants, and us ladies wore our Sunday clothes. And after the meal was served, grandmother called us to her. She's deaf. She was deaf. She's in heaven now, hearing everything. But she was deaf, and she said, I want to talk to you. So we all went to where she could see us, and she just really thanked us over and over again for dressing up. She said that was such an honoring thing to do, and she was so pleased. And we knew that that was something that they would appreciate, and so we did it. We did it. But now back to my earlier story. They are so friendly and so gracious. They enjoy having guests in their home. And so one of Steve's fellow employees in a business in South Carolina was dating a girl from Harrisonburg, Virginia, And so when he'd go up, he would stay at one of their places, one of the sisters' places. And she complimented him one time on how well he made his bed. Said, you just did a really good job. And then one time he brought up a young man who works in the business, and he's a native Haitian. And he stayed there with them that night. And then they went back home, and then this coworker came back up to visit his girlfriend, and she goes, well, she said, you do a really nice bed, but there's somebody who does one better than you. And he goes, oh, well, who was that? And she said, well, that Haitian guy that stayed with you that time, his bed was immaculate. It was beautiful. And he thought, oh, we'll go back and tell him. So he went back and told this Haitian fellow about how impressed his aunt was. And he goes, he said, it was so beautiful, I didn't even sleep in it. He said, I couldn't bring myself to even crawl into that bed, so I slept on the floor. And so I don't know if our coworker ever told his aunt that story or not, but anyway, that she cared so much about the beauty of it, and it is something very pretty about that. I'm not throwing fingers at that. I'm not saying now go home and don't make the corners really nice and neat. But anyway, it's just a story of interest in sharing our places. We need to let our guests feel comfortable. What is comfortable for them? I've also been to a place where, you know, I pull back the covers to get in and there's grass all through it. And the tub is so filthy, dirty around it, you're not even sure if you should even get in it. And there's some things I resolved is make sure that the bathroom is always clean. That's just one place that even if I have guests, even if students are coming up, even if somebody comes in, that's the one place I quickly go to, is it clean? Just to make sure that the person feels to know it's clean. The rest of the house doesn't have to be. The windows can be smudged, whatever, but that bathroom is clean. Let the whole earth be filled with the glory of God. The four functions of a home: a safe place to belong, a rich place to grow, a fascinating place to learn, and a warm place to share. Contribute to nurturing lovers of God. That's the vision. Contribute to nurturing lovers of God. And that all, when we nurture lovers of God, we work towards the goal of filling the earth with the glory of God.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders Educational Programs. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.